Welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
So, Adam, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Adam is a director of transformation and strategy here at Third Stage. So, Adam, can you just give us a little bit of an introduction around your role at Third Stage?
Yeah, so as a director, my responsibility is for helping build teams around our projects and our programs. So when we have somebody come in and has an implementation that they're looking to have some help with, I work to understand their challenges and what it is they, where their gaps are and what they need, and help put together a team to solve for those needs and then guide the project through to completion strategically. So that's generally what I do in a nutshell, but we can talk a little bit more in detail about it as we go.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're talking about a specific system, and I want to kind of give just some background. Microsoft Dynamics 365 is currently experiencing some implementation and resourcing challenges. When we have these conversations, the objective is to make sure that our client community and audience has the tools and tactics to overcome these challenges. It does not mean that we don't support D365. Actually, on our top 10 ERP systems of 2020, they're actually number one. So I just want to precursor the conversation with, this is just something that we want to bring out of and lift the veil on how you can kind of overcome this. So that said, that precursor, Adam, can you give us just the landscape of the current challenges with implementing D365?
Yeah, that's a. I think that there's a lot wrapped up in what you just said, but overall, you had kind of this boom of implementations that kind of came because of the pandemic, and that stressed an already challenged resource pool, particularly as it pertains to Microsoft Dynamics platforms. Even before the pandemic, we were. Helping a lot of clients with issues in staffing Dynamics 365 implementations, just from a quality perspective, rather hit or miss. And now that we see you follow on with the boom of ERP and digital transformation projects that happen as part of the pandemic, and you're stressing an already stressed system, if you will. So what we're finding with a lot of folks is some of our clients have really good access to Dynamics 365 teams, and then others do not. So that's really the crux of it, and making sure that you have good team members from your system integrator is a really important component of implementation success.
So is this problem, just to clarify, is it unique to Microsoft Dynamics 365, or is this kind of an industry pain point?
I'd say it's an industry pain point because of how projects are generally staffed. We've seen it with other software platforms as well. I think the difference for Microsoft Dynamics is that this was a challenge before the pandemic, with most other providers. If you found a good solid system integrator, they had access to good solid resources, and that wasn't as big an issue with other platforms. With Microsoft, it seemed to you could find a good implementer and then still end up with bad resources just because of the nature of what you've done as it pertains to the marketplace and staffing that project on the whole.
And why do you think that is? Do you have any insight to that specifically?
I don't know if I'd say what I have is insight into why that is from a perspective of that setup. I suspect that there are a number of things at hand with the Microsoft Dynamics stuff. One of them is that it is a very strong platform, and so it's been in demand for quite some time. The fact that it's Microsoft, and most people have all kinds of Microsoft tools as it is, and Dynamics becomes a feed into that. I think it speaks to the success of the platform. Mm-hmm. There's also the manner in which Microsoft can be implemented. You don't actually have to be a system integrator to implement Microsoft Dynamics. We have a client that is implementing Microsoft Dynamics Business Central, and they don't have a system integrator at all. You know, they decided to do all of their work in-house. So that's kind of part of the challenge. I think that another part of it is Microsoft doesn't get as involved in their implementations as other system integrators or software vendors. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a distancing there. So that might be another part of it. This is all speculation, though. Yeah, I don't have anything sure. that I've seen that is definitively, this is why it's hard to implement Microsoft Dynamics. Yeah. The other part of it is just that it is a large and complex software package. Mm-hmm. And large and complex software packages are by nature difficult to implement. So,
and what happens when you do have these implementation challenges as a client? Does your timeline get pushed back? Does your budget increase? Can you just tell us some side effects of that overall scenario? Yeah,
that's a really great question. And I think that there's a core assumption there that you have to recognize, which is you notice it early enough. But generally, if it's something that you notice early enough, you can make changes to the project team, and you can request that those changes are made from your system integrator. So if you find that you do have somebody that is underperforming, maybe they don't understand your business and they're not connecting with it. We've seen that recently with some of our clients and saying, look, they just, I don't know why it is I'm explaining how this works again. We're not special in what we do, but it seems like the challenge is in understanding our business. When you start noticing those types of things and start noticing that the quality that you're getting is low and that you need to make a change, if you make those changes fast enough, early enough, and accurately enough, you can limit the impacts to your implementation. But if it's something that kind of goes on for a little while, we'll continue with the example of somebody who doesn't understand your business the way that they need to design software around it. That person is going to continue to work with a lesser understanding of your business. And as they continue to work and build your software, that misunderstanding is going to be represented in what gets built. And then what you see is you start to see those types of things come out in testing. And that's not unique to Microsoft. It's an overall implementation thing. Actually, talked to a gentleman recently in Europe that was implementing SAP, and their integrator, they could not find somebody on their integration team that understood their business. And that really caused a lot of challenges, and their go lives continue to get pushed back because their system integrator can't find teammates that understand how they work. On a Microsoft side of things, as you start to configure components of software, you want to make sure that that understanding is strong and well aligned towards what it is you do as an organization. Because at the end of the day, even the smallest tweak of understanding can lead to something being built inaccurately.
Absolutely. And I want to dig into some of those tactics or strategies to be able to overcome some of those issues or barriers in just a second. But I just want to take a minute to recognize some of our global audience joining us. So we've got some Texas here in the United States, all the way over in Norway, some other United States in the East Coast. So just a reminder, if you do have questions or want to join the discussion, just go ahead and comment on whatever platform you're watching on, and we will address your questions here. A lot of times when we talk about a software specific piece of content, we can get a lot of insight from our user community or mm-hmm. anyone that has experienced any issues as well. So feel free to engage with whatever social platform you're viewing from today. So let's back up just a little bit, Adam. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Microsoft addressing the lack of resources or maybe the lower quality of integrators, in your opinion, have they done anything to kind of help resolve that in the marketplace?
That might be part of the challenge. I haven't seen anything that's Microsoft leading the charge on fixing any of this, and the fact that it's been kind of consistent from Microsoft for quite some time is a part of the challenge. Microsoft has a different type of relationship with their system integrators than most vendors, in that they don't. It is very, very, very rare that Microsoft implements its own software, if at all. They're entirely dependent on their system integrator network, and part of that is as a result of the antitrust lawsuits that Microsoft had back in the day, and they were kind of forced to create some checks and balances in this, in the way that they approach software, and their ERP is something that is impacted by those types of decisions. So the way that they they have it set up is it's kind of an arm's length type of thing. Even from a perspective of when you sign a contract with Microsoft for enterprise software, that's actually managed by another company, the signature and the maintenance of that contract. So you have Microsoft that you buy the software for. You have this other third party that you contract with Microsoft through, and then you have a system integrator that is responsible for building the software itself. So I think this is that kind of arm's length nature has led Microsoft to be less invested in solving this challenge. But it also is a part of the creation of it, because that dependence on their system integrator network creates a lot of openings for a lot of great things. But as it opens for great things, it also opens for all of the things that come in with that. And I think that's part of the challenge that we're talking about today.
And so is that model unique to Microsoft, or is that pretty typical with other systems as well?
It is pretty typical with other systems to have a system integrator network. Microsoft is a little bit less directly involved in their implementations, where it's less common for you to know who you can call at Microsoft if you have a problem with your integrator. Whereas with others, Infor, SAP, Oracle, and all of the others, there's usually somebody that's a bit more visible from the vendor if you're working through the system integrator themselves. I think there's also a thought process where when the system integrator is separated the way that Microsoft has them, you have less of a direct connection to the folks that code the software. So let me see if I can think of a way of framing it. Let's say Infor, for example, is building a lot of new programs, the new functionality within their cloud suite. And Infor is creating that, and Infor knows how to implement it. Mm-hmm. That knowledge then gets passed down from Infor to the system integrators once it's built and effective. And then the system integrators get a chance to learn it from the experts that designed it and built it, right? And have implemented it and all of those things. Whereas with Microsoft, you don't have that same internal consulting services network that is expected to be the, well, now that Microsoft knows how to do it all themselves, then you add in the system integrator network and that knowledge transfer can happen. I think there's a gap there.
Interesting. So when you are looking at a software selection, which we do a lot here at Third Stage, do you take into consideration the challenges of implementation when recommending a specific software? Or, and how much does that affect your recommendation for our clients as an independent and agnostic consultant?
Yeah, so you have to do two things when you do this. You have to select the right software, and then you have to implement it well. Those are two separate things. The software functionality, when the functionality is there, Microsoft will be recommended. And our assumption is that we're going to help find a partner that can do that. You can, to plan away from the risks that come with the Microsoft implementation, is if they don't exist for other system integrators, is not something that we do. However, what we do consider is that if we're going to implement a software system that we know has some challenges, and Microsoft has its own unique challenges. Every other software package has its own unique challenges. But we work with our clients to plan around that. It, often becomes part of the risk management tactics and part of the risk log, you know, quality of resources and those types of things. And we do recommend that if you start to interview people before you sign and you know who your key roles are. I always like to think about the systems architect as well as the program manager from the system integrator. Both of those roles are folks that you should interview and become very comfortable with before you sign. That's usually the best way of doing it. But they should be, those are two key critical roles that as we work with our clients and when we've suggested Microsoft Dynamics in the past, our focus then becomes on, let's make sure we got the right team behind this. You don't want to be stuck with bad resources for a long time. So that it becomes more of the implementation readiness and the implementation management plan to accommodate for those things that we know may become challenges along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Adam's really hoarse from yelling at our kids. So
I don't yell at our children.
Lift behind the curtain. Adam and I are married. We have two toddlers, but he's right. He does not get it. Just a little joke to lighten all of this very technical content. But I want to dig into show a comment here from one of our LinkedIn users. So the lack of a system integrator has been challenging. I've had to deal with that too. Great call out, Adam. I look forward to learning more on how to deal with these kinds of challenges. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about if you don't have a system integrator and maybe the quality of system integrator isn't on par with what you need as an organization. What are some things that you can do to overcome that?
I was recommending my clients that they consider that their system integrator is the technical team, right? And you want to have technically skilled folks implementing that software. That should come not just from the system integrator, but also from the client side, right? You guys have to be able to match that as a client to be able to understand what's the way the software is being built. And frankly, you're going to have to maintain that software and play a role in that in the future as well. So being engaged at that level, I think, is important. But what we tend to recommend for our clients, regardless of software package, but when that is a tactic for mitigating risk in general, is to have an independent third party run your program management and your change management practices so that you're managing the implementation on the people side and the technical side is left to the folks that are skilled in it. If you are asking your system integrator to do things that they are not skilled in, they won't do them well. That's a simple thing, right? That's I'm not a hockey player. I've never been good on ice skates. So if you put me out on the ice with a hockey stick, you know what you're going to, what you should expect from me. Not a lot. But on the other hand, if you take somebody who's been doing it their whole life and put them in a position where they, where it fits their skill set, and you just ask them, hey, you got one job. That's the technical implementation. And we're going to bring in folks that are skilled in the other areas of program management and change management. That's a real good way of mitigating that. It also creates a scenario where you have another set of eyes watching out for you. One of the things that's really hard about implementations is just the sheer fact that it's difficult to know what's just hard and what's going wrong. And telling the difference and having an independent third party with experience in that and knowing the difference is really helpful to be able to say, are we having a challenge here just because we should be having a challenge, or do we really have a problem that we need to confront and solve?
Absolutely. So digging into kind of that PMO role, is that something that you do, that you come in and help the client not only select the software, but then also interview or kind of vet, if you will, SIs?
Yep, we do that. That's one of the services that we offer. We generally recommend it to anybody that's hiring a system integrator that they take a real close look at that partnership, because that system integrator is going to be a part of your life for 10 to 20 years. But yes, we do those types of things, interviews, referenceable clients. I always like the idea of referencing a client and not from a perspective of would you hire these people again or not, because no system integrator or business is going to intentionally give you a bad reference, but ask them about what their experience was when they faced challenges in the implementation. How did this system integrator help you through some of the conversations, which were, well, we could code something brand new just for you, or we could help you change your business processes, which is which. I'm of the mind that there's a confirmation bias on the system integrator side, which is I've seen this software do anything, so I can therefore make it do anything. So my recommendation is that we just make it do what you want it to. That's not always the right path and can create problems. And when you're talking about a system that requires the level of configuration and encoding that Microsoft does, that's not the way you want to approach the conversation. You want to know, I need to change this software for good, sound business reasons, as opposed to, oh, the system integrator said that they could do it, so we'll just do that, because that gets expensive.
Absolutely. And so if you are an organization that's talking to a system integrator or engaged with an SI, and you don't have the knowledge, or you don't, that's not your day job, right, to interview system integrators, what are some questions or some red flags that you should look for or ask in that interview process?
The project plan, I would go straight for that. And one of the things that I really like about getting a project plan and a detailed one from your system integrator is it solves a lot of problems. First of all, if you understand my business well enough, you'll be able to put together a detailed project plan, and you'll be able to tell me exactly how it is you think you're going to do this. And you'll have areas that are for contingencies when we're going to have these types of conversations and those ones. So a project plan that's specific to me as a client shows an understanding that I know your business well enough to actually create a project plan. What the project plan also does is it gives you an idea of what a realistic timeline is. 12 to 18 months is a big window, and what that actually looks like and when we're actually going to go live are key components of what you should be thinking about deliberately. I like getting my hands on that project plan up front, so that we can start checking those types of things. It also puts you in a spot where you're better prepared when your project does start to have a detailed project plan. And as you start talking through that with your system integrator, having it up front before you sign a contract so that it can be in there is a real benefit, as opposed to starting that project planning afterwards while it's on the client's dime, if you will. If you're paying for your project plan to be developed at a level of detail that you could have gotten to in the commercial process, then you're paying for something that you may not need to. So I always like to get that level of detail, as much detail as I can. Then it shows the level of quality behind the program management side of things and how it is that system integrator is going to approach a project.
Yeah, definitely. That's great insight for sure. And so important, right? Because that's a key player and a key piece of achieving a successful digital transformation.
If you are aiming for transformation success, turn to Third Stage Consulting Group. Third Stage's independent and technology agnostic consulting team helps clients define their digital strategies, define their roadmaps, and manage their transformations. With offices in the US, Europe, and Australia, our team helps the world's most forward-thinking organizations through their transformation pitfalls and risks. If you are embarking on a digital transformation or business change initiative, contact Third Stage Consulting to see how we can help you reach the third stage of transformation success. Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstageconsulting.com.
So I'm curious, when you have a client that might have purchased D365, mm-hmm. and maybe they're like mid-tier, mid-market, not a huge, huge company that would be a huge priority for a system integrator, is there a lack of resources that might push out their timeline? Like, do you ever experience a scenario where they purchase the software, but they can't implement it for a really long time because there is no system integrators available or resources available?
Yeah. That's another thing that we see a good bit of folks that sign a contract thinking that they're going to start within a couple of weeks, because that's generally been standard, and it getting pushed out. get that information up front before you sign. Know when your start date is going to be, know who's going to be on your projects, and you can eliminate that problem. I've had a number of folks that are implementing software packages that are signed and waiting. They're paying subscription. Like, keep in mind, software is sold by subscription now. Mm-hmm. The idea that your software isn't going to be up and your implementation isn't going to start for 3 months doesn't mean anything to the vendor. They're already getting paid. So as far as they're concerned, that's not a problem. From a perspective of getting that start date moved up because of resources, if you haven't done your due diligence in the procurement process, then you're in a position where you have to take the next available in line resource. And you're putting a spot, well, what if that person's not the right one? Well, now you got to make a decision. Do you delay or do you go with somebody who might be the wrong resource for your project? And that creates other challenges. This same question is kind of reminding me of somebody that I've been speaking with recently that, they have a team which has, their system integrator has misjudged their business based on their data. And so they're working to try to figure out how to get the data cleaned up and migrated appropriately. And they don't seem to understand the process. So go live has been delayed multiple times. I think at this point, the first couple of delays were out of April and it was a week at a time. Now kind of gone back and said, so what is it? What is the actual timeline for doing this, right? Like, don't tell me what I want to hear, which is we'll be live next week. Tell me what's the truth. And they added another month to say, all right, we'll have it up and running by this date. And the question becomes at this point, well, why is it taking so long? And is it because of a lack of quality of resources? At this point, you're kind of beholden to it in a way which is gives you very few options. And that getting your Microsoft Dynamics platform up and running is in a month, which is now 2 months after your original go live, creates the problem of, well, what if I decided I wanted to fire these people? I can't. You know, at this point, we're talking not only about my data, but about something that's ready to go live, other than the data, we think. And so I have to keep this team together who has put me in this position by underperforming in the first place. Right. So if I just change a couple of data guys out and I swap in new ones, how much time does it take for them to learn mm-hmm. my business well enough to know how to run my data through this? It's kind of a bit of a catch 22 in that there's not a good option here. So, those types of things are, we try to identify them earlier mm-hmm. If we can, so that we can solve for them before they become a problem.
And I think that's really the critical piece of having that independent third party involved, just because it is sort of an investment in the insurance of your overall project, because this, if they, you know, are independent, truly consultants, would have the ability and experience to really see these types of things coming, so that, mm-hmm. you know, clients aren't in a situation where they have no choice but to go forward on somebody else's timeline and have zero control of their own project. Yeah. Something you said really stood out to me there. And so I want you to clarify if you can. So you have to pay like for that SaaS service even before you implement it?
Yeah. So, and this, you're just as surprised as some of our clients are. Okay. You pay for your site, you pay your first, and depending on terms, you pay your first licensing fees upon signing a contract. And typically you sign your contract with your software vendor. What's the better way of putting it? It's not common to sign with a system integrator and then with the software vendor. It's mm-hmm. more often either the other way around, where you sign for software and then the system integrator, or you sign them both together as a package deal, and your payment is due upon signing. This is something that we spend a lot of time talking about internally, about the impacts of subscription software. Uh-huh. 5-10 years ago, before this was was the mainstay in the marketplace, it was easy to talk to a vendor and say, you know what? All right, we got our licensing fees nailed down. They're perpetual licenses. You buy them once, you own the software. And it was easy to say, but we don't want to pay those license fees until the software is up and running, until we go live, right? It creates an incentive to actually go live and those types of things. There are some licenses that you'd pay for up front just because you had to have some to use the software and to build it itself. But the bulk of them could be pushed off until go live, at which point then you buy your licenses. Because as far as the system, the vendor is concerned, you know, $1 million in licenses on day one versus on go live, you know, today versus a go live, still $1 million. The number hasn't changed. Whereas with subscription services now, you pay up front and it's really difficult to get that negotiated out. And then you pay for licenses, whether you're using the software or not. It's either quarterly or annually most of the time, but yeah, you pay them before you use them.
Wow, I had no idea that was the case. That seems like there would be zero accountability on the side of the vendor to help their customers.
They're already getting paid. I mean, there have been we've helped a lot of clients with licensing challenges that had a failed implementation, never went live, and are stuck with licenses that they don't use.
Wow. Well, that's a podcast for another time, for sure. Absolutely, because I have a lot of questions, but I won't completely derail and hijack our conversation here. So if you find yourself as an organization, you know, not for the fault of your own, just what you don't know, right? In a situation where they are kind of in this really hard dynamic of being right in between a system integrator that they've already engaged and a software that they're struggling to implement, what are some things that they can do to help move the project forward, or at least triage to make sure they're not blowing their budget or blowing their timeline?
Well, for starters, get a good clear idea of where your implementation is. Is it on track, or and what does it look like? You know, you don't want to find out that you're building the wrong software and testing. That's months and months and months into the project. But at the same time, you know, having a good feel for how well it's going early and often is really a key component of that. So that, you know, that, all right, you know, these folks are really understanding my business. So I feel confident in that. Mm-hmm. Microsoft in particular, has a number of different types of ways of working that, are advantageous in this, that you might find yourself being able to take advantage of a system integrator who is focused on your industry. Microsoft by far has creates the most opportunities for intellectual property from system integrators, where you have Microsoft Dynamics platforms that are then built in to fit different niche industries. There are steel making and metals accelerators for some system integrators. Others are more focused on advanced warehousing and they own intellectual property in that. Still others more for things like textiles or for agriculture or all kinds of different verticals that Microsoft licenses through system integrators called value added resellers, mm-hmm. who add their own flavor to the Microsoft platform. And Microsoft is a bit more open with allowing for that type of thing than other providers. So one of the things that you can do to get a leg up is see if you can find a system integrator. Food and beverage is another good example, who specializes in your industry, so that you know, at least from the very beginning, if they have intellectual property built around something that's unique to you, the likelihood that they understand your business and industry is greater.
Yeah. Definitely. That sounds like a really smart approach. So I'm curious if any business is kind of immune to these challenges. And I'm just thinking through like bigger multi-million dollar software packages with the bigger system integrators, those types of things. Are those challenges felt by that size of a project and client as well?
Yeah. I'm of the mind that those are actually more expensive problems and harder to detect. We'll take a hypothetical client with a hypothetical scenario, right? So let's say you're a $5 billion company implementing Microsoft Dynamics Finance and Operations, or Finance and Supply Chain, whatever they call it today. And you have a multi-year implementation. You got a very, very large system integrator that's helping you through this. And generally, the biggest system integrators, when they encounter challenges, the first thing they do is add another body to it. And then the second thing they do is add another body to it. And you can guess what the third and fourth things are, right? So what ends up happening is you end up with this army that masks the problem and increases the cost and drags out the timeline, because now we've got people that are onboarding that need to come up to speed, that need to have an impact. And whether or not they're even quality resources, you're throwing the problem at itself at that point, because you're just rolling the dice on it. And you end up in a spot where you have an army of people that are assigned to your project, and you don't have any idea which ones are quality and which ones aren't. So you end up masking the problem until all of a sudden you can't go live. And as a $5 billion company, you probably have been working on this for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you can't go live, and you're trying to figure out why. And why did it take us so long to learn this? Mm-hmm. And it's, well, because it's been masked. We've been trying to solve it by not taking the approach of understanding what the problem is in the first place, which is why I think an independent third party is an important piece of the program management of software selections, because that system integrator has no reason to tell you that, well, you know what, we got a bad resource here, so we're going to add another one to help that bad resource. They're not going to tell you that. They're just going to go and they're going to do it. And you're not going to know the reasoning behind it until you end up in a lawsuit, because you'll never know the difference. So those larger companies, I wouldn't say are immune to it. I would say that it takes longer to see it. And then they tend to have more resources available to throw at it when it does become more expensive, right? So if we end up blowing our budget by double, a $5 billion company is going to be able to handle that. Let's say it's a $2.5 million implementation, and now it's a $5 million implementation. A large company is going to be able to handle that a lot more effective than a smaller company that doesn't have the resources to spring another $2.5 million out of nowhere, because that's not a rounding error for them. It's material. So, the problems can be bigger with the bigger organization and take longer to identify. There's also the benefit of resources that those larger firms have in being able to stomach that and get through it. So
can you, as Third Stage or as another independent third party, can you actually get that information from the system integrator to oversee the project, or is there just some read between the lines strategies that you just know out of experience?
You're never going to get the full story unless it goes to litigation, right? And even at that point, you still might not, because contrary to popular belief, when you go to litigation, it's not everything becomes available. It's more of a, we're going to search all of the documents for these keywords and see if and try to get 99% of the documents that are relevant, and then try to figure out how to sort through all of them. And again, when you're that large of an implementation, the details are more difficult to put into context, especially way after the fact. And then at the end of the day, those conversations on the system integrator side tend to be internal ones, unless you bring it up, right? So-and-so isn't performing well, and they literally asked me if we are a make-to-stock company today. It's, what in the world are you talking about? So it's the obvious things that are easy to solve that get solved and are visible to the client, but the rest of that stuff is not stuff you'd ever even be privy to the information that would lead you to even think that there might be a challenge. So having that independent third party who is able to say, that guy over there, he's not getting it, or that girl over there, she's not getting it. Let's see if she needs something to help through that. Like, I think that the part of the independent stance that we take isn't to say that person's a problem, get rid of them. It's a, well, we have a challenge, just solve it, right? So If we find that we're having challenges with resources, what we typically do is we find ways of giving them more support to see if we can't help them become more successful. Because there is an opportunity cost to the idea that you would change people.
Right.
You lose that value of the knowledge that they've already gained. And you got to plan around those types of things.
Yeah, and that's just basic change management, you know, partner resolution. There's, we never really go in, you know, with guns a-blazing, if you will, to try and change everything. Our position typically is the client advocate, but also in conjunction with the other partners that we work with to be able to solve for the maximum business value for our clients. So I think that's really important to understand, because a lot of times there's misperceptions around third stage that we are always going to do what's best for our clients, but that doesn't mean that we don't work across the table with different SIs all the time and
members. Yeah. Well, we're here to be a partner for all those involved, right? That's the general goal, at least from a third stage perspective, which is to say everybody here wants the same thing, which is to go live on time and on budget and do this effectively as a team. And that's the approach that we come at.
Absolutely. So I want to kind of ask you, I know you can't talk a ton about your expert witness work because it is extremely confidential, but can you just give us an overview, because you are an expert witness, third stage is an expert witness a lot of the time, for these soft failed implementations that do lead to some sort of lawsuit. So can you tell us kind of the role that you guys play in that?
Consultant and investigator, I think, is the easiest way of putting it. When we start to learn, when we get pulled into the expert witness stuff, our first job is to figure out what went wrong and why, right? So that's a big part of it, and then kind of consult on the case itself. So what did go wrong on both sides, right? So client says system integrator blew it. System integrator says, well, client also blew it. So who blew it? We all did at this point. But when it comes down to the litigation, it becomes a matter of what were the failure points that were the most impactful, and how does that look as it pertains to the success or failure of the implementation itself.
Interesting. Yeah, that's definitely something that leads to our independent status, our non-biased status, is a lot of expert witness work, because we don't have any relationships with SIs or vendors from a financial standpoint or a biasy standpoint. So I think that's important to know too. I'm curious, we talked a little bit, getting back to D365, is there we talked about the industry size, the business size, right? Being immune to it. Is there any location or global impact for maybe multinational organizations or emerging market organizations to be aware of when it comes to implementing D365?
If you're thinking about it from a global level, I'm trying to think of the best way of framing it, because at the global level, the likelihood that you find one system integrator that's going to do it all across the world is generally lower than to have one for each area, or at least with interrelated folks. So I would say that on a global scale, if you're looking to implement, if you're looking to go big bang and do everybody all at the same time, you want to have one of those very large system integrators and somebody to keep an eye on them. That can support each location individually as you're building this globally. If you're talking more of a phased rollout country by country, I like a more localized approach that says we're going to build it here and then we're going to lift and shift it to somewhere else. And even at that, if you have one large team that was going face to face with one of those larger system integrators, what we see more often is that you still end up with different teams locally. So having somebody, you don't necessarily have to have the same system integrator site by site if you're doing that type of a rollout. And then since it's generally a different team when you get on the ground, even if it was the same integrator, you don't have the knowledge transfer benefits of using the same one as you would if you were doing a global Big Bang type of deployment. So.
And what about those mid-tier businesses that might be located in Africa or the Middle East or areas that might not be a Microsoft hub? What are some considerations for that? We obviously know the challenge of connectivity, right, as a cloud-based software, but what are some other things to consider when considering D365?
So part of it's the two different software packages, right? You got Finance and Operations and you got Business Central. F&O is the big tier one software. Business Central is more the tier two smaller software package. And that's the one that in most developing areas you find more common. The advice I would give those folks is saving a dollar today could potentially cost you quite a lot more money later if you don't do things properly. So cutting a corner, getting the cheapest system integrator out there, doing it yourself, or things that I'd suggest that you take a real strong consideration of the risks that you create in those types of scenarios and decide whether or not you're willing to accept those risks. You know, doing it yourself, you don't get a lot of support from anybody. And even project management, if you don't have that skill set in-house, becomes a challenge. Hiring the cheapest system integrator out there, sometimes you get what you pay for. So do you have what it takes internally to give them the support that they need? Or in both of these scenarios, do you have an independent partner who can help you understand when things are going a little sideways? Because sometimes it's hard to see the forest for the trees when you're in the middle of things.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely good advice. And if you are a global organization or located in somewhere outside the US, just a reminder, we do have offices in Africa, APAC, in Australia. We have presence in Hong Kong. And then we also are located in Europe. We have a Europe office too. So if you do have questions and you're not in the greater United States or North America, we also have in language presence for Latin America too. So lots of opportunities there. If you do have questions about your specific situation, feel free to reach out to us. But just to wrap up here, Adam, if you were to give one tip to a client that is considering D365, implementing it within their organization, what would that best practice be?
Well, I don't know if I like being pigeonholed to one tip, but what I will say is
no one ever listens to me when I say that, so feel free to give as many tips as you'd like to.
Well, so for starters, before I answer the question, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's joined us today. And for those of you from Norway, if I spoke to you this morning, hello again. others, on the line here in the States and elsewhere, we really appreciate you guys joining us for this conversation. I think that Microsoft Dynamics is a real powerful platform, and has a lot of benefits to it that, the things that we talk about today shouldn't preclude you from buying that one in favor of a different one. If it is the right software package for you. So I guess then my tip for somebody that if I was to narrow it to one would be that make sure that you get an extra set of eyes on things. The benefit of having somebody, even from a monitoring perspective, it may pay dividends way down the road. Mm-hmm. And that at Third Stage, for example, we have a habit of being able to see things around the corner that our clients aren't knowledgeable enough in ERP implementations to see them, and that the system integrators, it's normal for them. So it's not an around the corner. They already expect it. And since they already expect it, they're not really feeling like it's important to say a lot about it because it's normal for them. Mm-hmm. It's not normal for you because you guys don't implement software every day. So having somebody that can help identify those areas that are coming and what it is those are looking like, so that you can know how it's supposed to look, is really powerful. So that would be my suggestion, is having a intentionally having a set of eyes that is designed just for the sheer fact of making sure that the program is managed properly. And a lot of times the benefit of a third party doing that separates the fox from the hen house, if you will, and puts that level of visibility in a place where it can be more effectively managed.
Absolutely. Really well said. Just a reminder and some awareness tactics for you to be successful with this, you know, very powerful software. So thank you so much, Adam, for joining us today and sharing your insight.
Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.